Welcome to Walasaha. My name is Dominique Norales. It's the curious home for the good troublemakers, the world changers, and the dream chasers. And you know the deal. We're embarking on a special series with the Caribbean Youth Environment Network called Inbetweenity, the Green Pod, made possible through the generous partnership with the Clara Lionel Foundation. In this episode, we'll be taking a trip and talking about the Escazú Agreement and why it may just be the most important environmental treaty coming out of the LAC. The Escazú Agreement, which was adopted in 2018, coming into force just 2 years ago in 2021, finds its genesis all the way back in 2012 at the Rio+20 conference. It was considered at that time a pivotal and decisive moment in sustainable development. Indeed, this was a conference that gave birth to the global agenda of the 17 goals we now know as the Sustainable Development Goals. Why do we consider it the point at which Escazú was conceived? Well, back in 2012, one of the political outcome documents, a resolution, was coined the future we want. And in that document was one of the central tenets of Escazú, the reaffirmation of human rights. Resolution A66288, Article 9 states, "We reaffirm the importance of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, as well as other international instruments relating to human rights and international law. We emphasize the responsibilities of all states in conformity with the Charter to respect, protect, and promote human rights and fundamental freedoms for all, without distinction of any kind as to race, color, sex, language, religion, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth, disability, or other status." This agreement is considered to be novel because it focuses directly on the protection of environmental activists. And as the formal name denotes, our right to know, or our right to meaningfully participate in, and our right to social and climatic justice. The regional agreement on access to information, public participation, and justice in environmental matters in Latin America and the Caribbean, though, which is the formal name for the Escazú Agreement, according to the International Institute of Sustainable Development, has been signed onto by 24 countries, 12 of which have ratified it into law up until the treaty's first conference of parties. There are major gaps, however, as the Universal Rights Group references the Global Witness Report, noting that the most dangerous countries for environmental defenders are Colombia, Brazil, Mexico, Guatemala, and Honduras. And of these countries, only Mexico has ratified the agreement. Since then, 3 more countries, including Belize, would have ratified said treaty, with Jamaica looking keen to also follow suit. But with situations such as the Maroons fight to maintain its sovereignty and protect its land rights in the face of the bauxite industry, and Belize's difficulty with upholding the implementation of the communal land rights in terms of prior and informed consent compliance, and even Garinago land rights in Honduras that is being defended by OFRANE, the Black Fraternal Organization of Honduras, huge questions, heavy questions, still loom, and challenges abound with dire consequences on lives and livelihood. As one of CYN's representatives to have attended the Environmental Activists Consortium in Colombia in 2023, in April of 2023, I noted that there was a difference in how red tagging of activists occur in the Global South, especially land activists. And this is, of course, going to be a massive generalization because every context has its own innuendos and unique circumstances. But in the Caribbean space, the Anglophone space particularly, it is quite different. I find that the attack on livelihoods in the Caribbean is slow, gnawing away at livelihoods and taking away opportunities via discrimination. And in Latin America, the space is a direct attack on life, swift, immediate elimination of anyone perceived as a voice of dissent. Both of these situations are cases of grave injustice. I wanted to understand more intimately how we might have come to this binding treaty, what it means for nations today and for the future. And I couldn't think of a better person to talk to other than Senator Janelle Chanona, Vice President of Oceana in Belize, one of the organizations that have been at the forefront of Maritime Protection in Belize. Here's Senator Chinona.
I think what excites me about Escazú is the fact that this international treaty exists to not just assure that there's access to information about decisions, about the environment, about the economy, but it's really about empowering and enabling and encouraging and just making sure that, you know, you're not just at the table, but that you're able to participate at the table. I really feel like that's been a critical missing link, if I could put it that way, in terms of bridging that divide between communities and residents and citizens playing an integral role and being encouraged to play in that space and to have a say in that space. Because we know how things can be intimidating if you don't know the language, if you feel like the parlance is above your head, or, you know, the systems are intimidating. And that's really what it is, just to break it down into small change so that you feel like not just that you have the right, but that you can act on that right. Increasingly, groups in Belize and citizens in Belize are seeing the need to be participating, not just at the level of call-in shows or letters to the editor, but of embracing this role as national advocates and advocating for their positions and advocating for more information or direct access to information so that they do not even have to rely on specific groups. Since we've been in Belize, and I think from my analysis, you know, Oceana remains the only group dedicated solely, you know, principal cause to marine advocacy. And I really hope this expands that so that others describe themselves as advocates as well, because, you know, to be honest, it's really been disappointing to see different actors in multiple sectors respond negatively to this concept of an advocate and really kind of objecting to that. You know, who are you to be telling me what you want and that you need this, and, you know, kind of seeing as this undermining or this, you know, of check and balance scenario, when we really shouldn't be shying away from that. And I think that's what, if you look at the principles of Escazú, again, it's really saying that, you know, everybody has their role, but that the public and the citizenry has a role as well. And them asking for information should not be perceived as a nuisance or a pestilence or some type of begrudgingly complied with or time-consuming process that should, you know, discourage anyone from going through those steps and pushing through on that.
In the Belizean space.
Well, that's a lot to unpack, but I think the idea is definitely, just a segue from the earlier point, that it's really going to be how we define our role in that and how much we embrace our role, because Belize's implementation, as has been happening across you know, the countries who have ratified, will really depend on how the citizens of that country develop that through to fruition. So to define the word consultation and to really create a clear definition of saying, okay, if you put in your EIA impact that you have consulted, it's not you going into the community saying, this is what my project will do. It will have a specific definition, which is the current definition that I reject in terms of that being defined as consultation. That's information. And that's really what it's going to come down to, of the public embracing that right and responsibility and playing its role in setting those systems up and defining what sustainability is. There's a lot always tacked on to, oh, this project is going to bring jobs. Yeah, but what type of jobs? How stable are those jobs? How am I going to feel fulfilled at the end of the day with those jobs? Am I going to come home and feel like I've been made sick at that job? You know, whatever it is, you know, it's really going to come down not just to these very broad, vague terms and these very opaque promises, but really come down to nuts and bolts, so that when you make that decision and you have to live with that decision, that you know what you're signing up for. And that's really going to depend on the public, and that's really going to depend on advocates. And I think in terms of, you know, the reality of how activists and advocates have been treated regionally, I think, yes, knock on wood, Belize hasn't gotten to that level of violence, even with journalists who are critical. And I call that out because a big part of activism is transparency and accountability. And that's also a key pillar in journalism and media. And while we're not there, again, thank goodness, but it's also that we can get there if we sense this slippage and we see the slope going in the wrong direction, because we have seen where victimization has played a role, and we have seen where because of victimization, people are very quiet, or people are passive aggressive, or people choose what they believe to be is some kind of sacred sanctioned anonymity in the ballot box, and that's where they choose to show that they are protesting or how they're manifesting. And that really has to change, because I think, again, as citizens, if we believe ourselves to be living in a democracy and we are feeling some type of pressure to censor what we say, censor what we post, censor what we talk about when we're even among family and friends, then you've lost your voice. And that's, again, if you map out, you know, how other countries, other jurisdictions have ended up in dictatorships and other types of scenarios, that's one of the first things that happens, you know, not just censorship by law, but almost like an insidious self-censorship, because you have seen what happened, or because you believe if I do this, this is going to be a problem. And of course, this is not unique to Belize. We have a very small country, so perhaps it's more evident, it's more visible, because, you know, everybody got somebody will work, you know, for the government or with the government. Everybody have, you know, friends, family members in all these spaces. And it will take, and I keep telling people, I said, the beauty about Belize is it's very hard for us to copy and paste, because we have such unique, set of factors and dynamics. And that's a great thing, because one, we will only, you know, hurt ourselves if we try to copy and paste approach. But two, we can't copy and paste from nobody else, because we're unlike everybody else. So it has to be that we're creating Belize systems and Belize scenarios based on our Belizean realities. And again, that will depend entirely on how Belize implements these treaties, and with Escazú pushing, I think, for the same pillars of transparency, good governance, accountability, like the overarching good governance agenda. I think it dovetails nicely, and it should work. But ultimately, how well it will work will be up to all of us.
For sure. As usual, like every voice, no matter how small or how creolized or how Gaya or Garifuna, like every voice is very, very important.
Absolutely.
To ensure that there's a co-created vision that doesn't leave, and it sounds very cliche, but doesn't leave anyone behind. Literally, that is our goal, to not leave anyone behind. And I think even in the Caribbean space, and given just political histories, like having something like this that gives us protection in some way, and again legitimizes the fact that there are things that people need to speak up about that aren't going to be very welcome. There will be dissenting voices, but dissenting voices, I think, only strengthens that collective action that we have. And final question.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask you a bit about just what role do you see young people play, especially like with Oceana, like what role do you see young people playing in ensuring that these things not only are for today, but for generations to come?
It can't happen without young people. I mean, honestly, on a personal basis, young people give me so much hope for the future, because one, they could smell it a mile away. Two, the gaslighting is very hard to pull on them, and I see where the bad actors' attempt of doing that gets like, no, that's not happening. You know, that's going to be critical, because I think the disinformation with all of this, and I go back to those terms, because I think the emphasis now will always be on some type of washing. Greenwashing, blue washing, orange washing, something. This is going to be good for you, and this will strengthen indigenous rights, and trust me. And it's really going to come up to or come down to young people coming up, standing up and saying, no, I need the receipts. You know, I really need to understand this, and I really need to feel that this is actually what you're telling me. And it's not just because you're the person in charge telling me, the young person in the room. You know, I know from my own experience where, you know, you were called rude if you're asking somebody, you know, how dare you ask somebody in authority a question as if though you're not satisfied with, you know, the answer that you just gave. You know, you were supposed to take that and swallow it and be happy about it. And that's shifting in a way that I think needs to shift, because we're at the point with these issues, whether it's climate change, you know, whether it's indigenous rights, these are existential, and existential to the point where we have to remember existential means about our life, our ability to breathe, our ability to know where food is and to get food, not just know that the food is there. You know, these are existential realities. So because we know those challenges are real, our responses have to be just as real and just as impassioned. And these can't be just buzzwords that anybody could wraps up and say, oh, but no worry, my product's sustainable, and no worry, my project is gonna be, you know, so climate smart and so climate resilient, and this is gonna be like the poster child. No, like, we actually need to know that this is gonna work. We talk all the time about limited resources and all of this, and it's really, I think, so indicative to me at every juncture that while that is true on certain fronts, our resources and our young people are truly unlimited because they're so creative, they're innovative. I mean, we saw that with COVID, you know, we saw so much evidence of it. And I really reject any thought of, you know, killing that and reverting back to the status quo. And we see where there's such a resistance to that participation. And that's so disappointing from people in leadership, you know, this rejection of you know, right now we have a signature drive going on about citizens' right to be consulted via referenda in what happens next with the offshore oil moratorium. And some of the statements that's come out, it's been like, wow, y'all really don't want to give up any of that power, because it's, I mean, recall the Referendum Act says that the results are non-binding. This is a purely advisory result. And yet they're so like, oh no, why don't I do this? And why wouldn't you want to hear from right. your citizens? Why wouldn't you get their input so that that can guide the next decision? And I really hope that young people push that, you know, there are technological advances that we can apply. We have e-signature now being embraced by the government. We should have an app, you know, a citizens act. And maybe that's what Escazú will do. It will really facilitate that type of merger of innovative, creative, and young Belizean thinking around this concept of being informed and participating. And with that merger, come up with platforms where, you know, the same way we could spread that, you know, interesting dance video or whatever it is that goes viral, that we can, you know, use that technology to find out where people are thinking about certain issues, what they're thinking about projects, what we're thinking about, what's happening around them and how they're feeling. And as young people, you know, even to gauge, you know, what do you see in the future in terms of air quality? Do you think about, you know, these environmental concepts? And the last thing I want to say is, you know, it's really been, again, so motivational for me to see young people taking on what I think for even some adults, very hard to grasp these overwhelming concepts. Oh, well, we are dead anyhow, or better we just give up, or, you know, why would a fight, you know, the thing done dead or whatever it is. And young people are like, well, no, I, you know, I'm 18, I'm 20, I'm 24. I have, you know, 6 years of life ahead of me. I need to be there so that the quality of my life, you know, is what I need it to be. I don't want to walk around with an oxygen tank, I want a face mask, for go across the street, for go to school or whatever it is, you know, so that the quality of their life. And, you know, I coined, you know, that we talk about them being the future, but this is the present. And if they're not there presently and making their presence felt at those decision-making tables, then they're not going to have the future that they want and that they have a right to participate in that process and create the future that they deserve.
That was again Senator for the Belize Network of NGOs and Vice President of Oceana, speaking on what the Escazú can mean for us in the Caribbean if we utilize it well. Until next time, we encourage you to read a little deeper, engage in discussion with your community, and of course, we hope that we spurred your curiosity just enough that you are inspired to take action in big and small ways to advance the Escazú Agreement and localize the thing. Thanks for joining us here at Walasaha for Inbetweenity, the Green Pod, made possible through the kind generosity of the Carolina Foundation.